Hello, and welcome to the Ether Podcast. I'm Laura Thurston Goodrow, and in this episode, we'll visit with Dr. Ron Urantz about his article, Clausewitz in Space, Friction in Space Strategy and Operations, co-authored with Randall Carlson in our fall 2022 issue. Dr. Urantz is the Research Professor of National Security Affairs at the Strategic Studies Institute, the U.S. Army's Center for National Security Research and Analysis at the Army War College. His areas of specialization include air power and space power, deterrence, and crisis decision making. Prior to joining the faculty at SSI, he taught as an assistant professor at the Gladys B. West Space Seminar and the Department of Strategy, both at the Air War College. He holds a PhD in political science from UCLA. Welcome to the podcast, Ron.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. So first, I like to ask people what the kind of genesis of their interest in the subject that they wrote about. So what is the background? What's your background and your interest in space power strategy, space power in general?
So my background is actually as a political science professor studying international relations. I'm relatively new to space, but it's something I got interested in when I was teaching at the Air War College working for the Air Force when they stood up the Space Force. And what I noticed very quickly when I started to learn about space is that because it's a relatively new topic and kind of niche topic, strategic thought on space is still in its infancy. And so there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of insight, I think, to be gained by applying existing ideas and concepts on strategy from other areas to space. So, for example, I've been thinking about or I've been writing about deterrence theory, which was developed as a way to think about nuclear weapons, to issues of deterrence in space. Recently, I've been working on a piece that applies existing thought on alliances and on escalation to space. So these have to be adapted to space, but all of these concepts apply in space just as well as they apply on Earth. And that's how I got to the paper that we're talking about today. It kind of does the same thing. You know, I used to teach about Clausewitz, and this paper applies one of Clausewitz's most well-known concepts to space operations. It's something that's almost become a joke in the war colleges that, you know, Clausewitz can be applied to anything. And yeah. I think, you know, people might think, you know, it doesn't, this author from the 1800s might not apply in space. But his ideas do matter, or they can tell us something about space operations, too.
Yeah, that's true. Widely applicable, seems to be, continually.
Yeah.
So your article, as you said, engages Clausewitz's notion of friction in specific and applies it to conflict in space. So first, give us a sort of primer on the Clausewitzian notion of friction thought in general, and then go into how it applies to space strategy and operations, specifically the four potential sources of space friction you talk about in your article: space environment, maneuvering limitations, intelligence, and reliance on tech.
Yeah, sure. So, as I mentioned, Clausewitz, he's this military theorist from the 1800s, and his book on war is still considered maybe the most important book ever written about war, and we still teach it and draw lessons from it. So friction is one of his key ideas. He defined friction as anything other than enemy action that causes unexpected difficulties in wartime. So this could be anything from breakdowns of equipment to miscommunication, to accidents, to bad weather, just anything unexpected that interferes with the smooth execution of a plan or a military operation, you know, other than the enemy's action itself. So this can even be mental obstacles like exhaustion or stress that leads to bad judgment. So for Clausewitz, this was a very important idea. He went as far as to say that friction is the only thing that separates real war from war on paper. Friction is what makes the difference between plans and between reality, what it's really like to fight a war. He also warned that the reason it matters is that friction can accumulate to the point where entire operations or an entire war plan is basically ruined. You know, all these little things can add up, all these little breakdowns, all this accumulation of fatigue and stress, all these accidents, your bad weather can eventually really slow down or cripple a military operation. So you have to minimize it, you know, make decisions that minimize friction. But more importantly, it's always going to be there. So you have to be prepared for it when it inevitably happens. So our article is about friction in space operations. And I have to give credit to my co-author, Colonel Randy Carlson. He was the one who had the light bulb go off and realized that, oh, there's friction in space too. Things break down in space. There are accidents in space or in space operations. Even outside military operations, we're all aware of events like the space shuttle disasters. But beyond that, you have many accidents, failures to launch, you know, satellites that didn't work. Recently, SpaceX had satellites get caught in a geomagnetic storm. They didn't operate. So in military operations, if you're thinking about military operations in space, you know, friction could impact operations in space, but also operations on Earth and have a broader impact on war plans. So in our paper, we identify these four sources of friction in space to prepare the reader to understand what could interfere with these plans. So the first is space weather. So there's weather in space. You know, weather is an important source of friction on Earth as an unexpected obstacle to successful operations. But there's also weather in space. So that could include solar wind, which are electrically charged particles ejected from the sun. These can degrade satellite components. You have eruptions of radiation from the sun called solar flares. They can interfere with communication signals. They can also even make the atmosphere expand and contract. That affects satellite orbits. You even have these large eruptions of matter called coronal mass ejections that can impact the Earth's magnetic field, it can knock out electronics and so forth. So we have to be aware of space weather, and it may be in the future that military space operations will have to be timed around space weather in the same way that military operations on Earth are timed around terrestrial weather or even changes in the seasons. So that's the first source of friction. The second source are maneuvering limitations. So physical exhaustion is an important source of friction for soldiers on Earth. With satellite operations, you don't have human exhaustion, even though you could from the operators on the ground. But what you also have are satellites themselves can run out of fuel, at which point they're basically dead because there's no refueling options currently for satellites. So fuel limitations are not necessarily unexpected, but satellites may have to make unexpected maneuvers to avoid collisions. And this will probably increase as space becomes more crowded. And that can exhaust their fuel supplies. So they may not have the fuel that you expected or that's necessary to make maneuvers during operations when called upon. This problem can also introduce a sort of mental paralysis or a very difficult judgment for commanders. They may be unwilling to take the risk of maneuvering a satellite because it might affect the satellite's long-term viability, or at least they have to make that calculation in the moment, and it can be a very difficult one. So the third source that we talk about is intelligence. So Clausewitz saw bad intelligence as a source of friction, a source of unexpected difficulty that's not necessarily created by the enemy, even though it can be. Of course, the enemy wants to keep secrets, but can also be caused by one's own failures and kind of lack of ability to gather intelligence or to interpret intelligence properly. So this definitely applies in space. Locating and tracking satellites can be very difficult. Understanding their capabilities and their purpose is even more difficult. Understanding an enemy's plans or their intent can also be impossible. And there's also just sifting through vast amounts of information that we collect and interpreting it. All of these challenges can lead us to getting things wrong when the time comes and when a military operation is necessary. So the final source we talk about is actually technical complexity and an over-reliance on technical solutions. This is not one that Clausewitz mentioned specifically, but it is a danger in a highly technological force like the Space Force or you know, military space operations. And it can contribute to many sources of friction that he did identify. So equipment breakdowns can be more likely when you have very complex equipment, or they can be hard to replace or fix. Increased complexity of operations can lead to more mistakes. Another source of friction that Clausewitz didn't identify, but that can be caused by the technological complexity, is actually overclassification. You want to keep secrets about your technical abilities and technology, and this can deny your own operators critical information in important moments. And it's a problem that has been identified within the Space Force. So these are the four sources of friction that we identify that can interfere with military space operations. It's not a comprehensive list by any means. Clausewitz himself says you can never identify all the sources, and I'm sure we can come up with more. For example, the accidental interference with your own signals. People accidentally jam each other all the time. So there's many more, but we identified these four as particularly important ones.
Yeah, as you said, lots of sources of friction in space. And I'm glad you brought up the overclassification issue and how it impacts our allies and partners working with us and all that too, not just our own operators, but that's been a topic of interest in submissions that we've seen here so recently. So now you have all this friction and you have to alleviate the friction. But in the course of mitigating friction, you end up with what you call frictional trade-offs, which you identify as, you kind of bucket them in technology, operations, and culture. So now, can you talk about these frictional trade-offs and then address the recommendations you have to mitigate the trade-offs themselves?
Yeah, sure. So I guess I'll start by talking about just what's the result of all this friction. So I just gave you this long list of potential sources of friction in military space operations. So I'll start by talking about why does it matter? You know, what's the result? So in many ways, this friction and these problems might not be so different than a potentially enemy action. The availability of services from satellites, whether it's communication or navigation or intelligence and surveillance, may be interrupted. Military operations in space might fail. The timing of military operations might be affected. So, you know, in many ways, the way you respond to this friction is to be prepared to operate without this kind of guaranteed access to space systems, which is not so different than the way people are thinking about if military action happens in space by an enemy, that we might not have assured access. Access might be contested. So, you know, there's many people who are already trying to convince the broader military that the future will involve this contested space environment due to enemy action. But this friction is another reason why SAFE is not and has never been totally safe. And, you know, the writing about friction, it's also about helping the military understand that not only must space be incorporated into military planning, but that things in space will not always go according to plan. Just the same as, you know, in any other part of a war or a military operation, things don't always go according to plan. As you ask, so what do you do about it? Well, there's many solutions to frictional problems. We don't get into necessarily so many detailed solutions about what to do about it. I think our main purpose was just to, you know, help people recognize that these are issues. The argument we make is about these frictional trade-offs that you mentioned. So there's many solutions to friction, but we also make the argument that those solutions can introduce friction of their own. It's impossible to entirely eliminate it. This is something that has been written about and debated by military theorists, whether friction can ever be really reduced, whether we experience less friction today than we did in the past, or whether it's just the same amount. So any decision you make to try to reduce one source of friction probably has the effect of introducing others. For example, solutions to space weather or maneuvering limitations, which I mentioned, these will involve advances in technology. The Space Force is going to be a technological force no matter what. You're operating satellites remotely. Any solution to these kind of physical problems is going to involve some new technology. But as we said, relying too heavily on complicated technology can introduce its own sources of friction, equipment breakdowns, extra complexity, a lack of understanding by your operators, and so on. Another solution we talk about, for example, one of the solutions for the loss of communications, if you lose satellite communications, is to rely more on mission command and to train your forces to rely on mission command, where units in the field can operate without direction from above. On the other hand, mission command introduces a whole lot of friction because units have a you know, they're less able to coordinate their actions with each other. They're less able to communicate with each other. So the result on the ground is you can have all sorts of mistakes and all sorts of a lack of coordination between units in a military operation. Finally, you know, some have advocated for the Space Force to have more of a culture of adaptation and a culture of risk taking than it currently does, so that it's ready for when things go wrong. But of course, more risk taking can also introduce friction. So in all these ways, you have these frictional trade-offs. And we just want people to be aware that when you're making a decision to reduce friction from one source, from technology or from weather or bad intelligence or something like that, you may be introducing friction from another source, and you should never expect that you can eliminate it entirely.
Yeah, I think that's the complexity of warfare in any domain, but, you know, space domain has its own specific challenges, as you note. So the article was published, you know, a year ago, and in the last year, Space Force has changed leadership. And I'm wondering if, looking back a year on your article, have you seen the Space Force work to address some of these things, some of the changes in, you know, the publication of new doctrine, change in mission statements, anything like that? You know, I note that Space Force leaders are really seem to be emphasizing the posture of Guardians being war fighters. So I don't know if that might address some of the culture things that you're talking about, or just in general, if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if I've seen kind of any particular item from the Space Force that suggests that they're thinking more or less about friction and about these problems. I think a lot of people within the Space Force, they are aware of things like space weather and maneuvering limitations. They're constantly working to solve them. General Shaw recently came out and said, hey, these maneuvering limitations are a huge issue in military space operations, and they are something that we should really get working on trying to solve, that can be a big project for the future. So there is definitely attention to these issues. But I'm glad that you mentioned the culture and the warfighting culture, because you're right that many in the Space Force have been advocating for a warfighting culture or a transformation to a warfighting mindset. But I'm not sure we fully explored what that means. And I think this is a piece of it. It's not just being prepared for enemy action or being prepared to interpret problems on orbit as a possible result of enemy action, but it's also being prepared for things to go wrong in operations. And this is not just a Space Force thing. And this is something that the entire force needs to recognize. So, and I would say for me and my co-author, that was part of the point of this paper, is not just to talk to space operators or the Space Force, but to talk to the force more broadly, so that people in the broader military who might not be too familiar with space operations have that understanding that space operations are like military operations. They things go wrong. Operations do not always go smoothly, and you can't expect them to go smoothly. Going back to the culture point, it does introduce a bit of a dilemma. For example, this notion of the Space Force having a warfighting culture, part of it, as I mentioned, is the notion that space operators are not just service providers. They're not just there to keep the lights on and keep satellites flying and working. They are also military operators who have to, or they have to be open to interpreting problems as not just breakdowns, but as the result of enemy operations. If something's not working, you have to think, is this the beginning of a military operation? Do I need to be prepared to do things like maneuver a satellite or ensure that a backup system is providing services to forces on the ground? However, that doesn't mean that you can ignore the problem that stuff does break down on its own, that there are accidents on their own, that there are miscommunications, and that these things could be even more severe when a military operation is going on and when things are chaotic. So, you know, deciding what it means to have a warfighting mindset, I think needs to incorporate this awareness of friction in space operations.
So, to close out here, do you have any final thoughts or, you know, insights that you'd like to finish us out with here?
So I would just say, as I said at the beginning, I think that bringing these classic kind of strategic ideas to bear on space is important. I've heard people try to make the argument that space isn't different. I don't totally agree with that, but it's not so different that these kind of fundamental wartime concepts don't apply. And I think you can learn a lot by bringing in people from the outside, people from the Army, people from the Navy, people who have experience in other domains or in other operations, to apply some of their warfighting knowledge or their warfighting kind of wisdom and experience to space. And I think the same thing applies, you know, on the academic side, bringing in some of these concepts from military strategy, political science, some of these classic writers who have been thinking about warfare and have been thinking about international relations and, you know, applying those ideas to space. I think you can really, again, as long as they're adapted with some, not, you know, good knowledge of space, because it is unique in some ways, but I think you can really generate some important insight. And so I think that's an importance of what you guys do. And it's an importance of not spreading the space gospel, but trying to educate others about space, because that doesn't just inform them of what's going on in space, but it allows their insights to be used by the Space Force and other space operators.
We're looking forward to the special issue that you've contributed to. Our Ether's doing an out-of-cycle issue on space featuring some PME work over the last year, and also featuring an article co-written by General Shaw discussing space maneuver and the importance of dynamic space operations, I think is how he phrases it. But more to follow. That one will be coming out here in a couple of weeks. So we look forward to that. And we can visit about your article in that too.
Okay. But
in the meantime, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I really enjoyed visiting with you about this. And I commend your article to our readers. It's a good intro to kind of military theory as it applies to space.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me.